of Parshas Sav. Revi of Sav is really the, you could kind of call it the Chag HaSmicha of the Torah, except that the Torah also has Smicha, which is a different category. But if we were to treat the Kohanim as the Rabbanim, so as opposed to Yoshua for this discussion, so here is the Kohanim essentially getting their graduation ceremony and being prepared to assume the role of the Kohuna, Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol, and his sons to be Kohanim. And the parasha, the Aliyah, begins after Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe Lemor, says, Kach es Aaron v'es banav ito. What does that mean, Kach? So, Kach, Rashi explains, doesn't mean you pull him like with kfiya, with sticks, and you schlep him in, as it might sound, but it means kachenu bedvarim u'mashcheinu. That is something we saw, that kfiya, sometimes we were talking about that, just to impose a little bit of synergy onto the sentence. So we saw sometimes kfiya is physical and sometimes it's verbal. So here, what does it mean to take Aaron? It means to pull him over with good words. And in fact, the Sifchei Chachamim writes that this is actually not from the Lashon of Kicha at all. This is essentially a different word that means that. That means that you should entice people with words and bring them over. And the Malbim, in his comments, the Malbim writes that the idea of the language of Kicha, understanding the way it normally means, is that if you're going to take something without anything in between, without any kind of interruption. So, for example, when we talk about Lakicha by a Lulav and Esrog, so the Gemara has a whole discussion whether or not it's permissible to do so with anything in between, with any kind of a chatzitza. Because the understanding is that you take directly. So too, if we're talking about taking a person, so what does that language mean? How are you going to take a person? If you're going to take them directly, so the most direct way is to go to the heart. And to go with words that are going to win them over, that's the idea. There are some who have commented that you see here Moshe and Aaron are very similar and are likely compared in so many different ways. And Moshe, we know, is famous for his anivus, and he had to be convinced to lead the Jewish people and to take on all of his important roles. And so to Aaron, you think that if he's about to be given this tremendous covet to be designated the Kohen Gadol, so what is this that we have to convince him? We have to try to figure out the right way to get him to come over. So you see that he had this unbelievable anivus, and this was a quality that Moshe and Aaron shared, as the sources indicate they shared many of their good midos. Now the Gemara Masech Zvachim has a comment, which may be referring to here, it's a little bit of a question, that the smichas aparshios of the karbanos and the big day kahuna, the Gemara says that it's there to tell us that just like the karbanos are machaper, so too the big day kahuna are machaper. There is somewhat of a discussion. The Torah Tumimah has a whole analysis whether this is really referring to this week's parsha or it's referring to parshas tetzaveh. I think we made a comment at that time as well. The Gemara has a statement that could be referring to either. We find in both places the smichas aparshios. It's not clear how much it matters. The Torah Tumimah goes to a great effort to show that the language of the Gemara really sounds like it's talking about parshas tetzaveh. But either way, the point seems to be the same. And it's interesting that we need so many kaparas, that Chazal, we talked about this a little bit over the course of those weeks, that the Gemara identifies different averos for which the Big Day Kahuna are Mechaper, which the different components of the Big Day Kahuna are Mechaper. So the notion that we need Karbanos to be Mechaper and that we need the Big Day Kahuna to be Mechaper means that we're probably in trouble a lot of the time, that we need so many types of Kaparas. So it seems that the notion is the Karbanos, the whole idea of sacrifice. So that's the negative kind of Kapara, the idea that we've done something wrong and now we have to pay the price. So the korban is that kind of a kapar. While the Big Day Kahuna, the Kavodal Tiferes, is a whole different mentality. It's that we are going to invest in making a positive statement. We are going to do something glorious. And this shows where our values are. And that expression of values that will undo problems that challenge those values. So let's say, for example, if we talk about Lashon Hara, it's a frequent topic that we talk about. So on the one hand, so you have a kapara for the damage that Lashon Hara does. We talk about the Big Day Kahuna being a kapara for Lashon Hara. So we talk about the Me'il, and we've talked about the imagery about how the Me'il is going to evoke the broader picture of the Tcheles and the sky. We talk about how the bell will invoke positive things that you can do with sound. So it seems to be the whole mentality of the Big Day Kahuna being Mechaper. It's a different kind of kapara than the Karbanos. The Karbanos are about, okay, I did something wrong, now I have to sacrifice something. And the Big Day Kahuna are about how we invest positively. We focus our resources on making a glorious presentation in order to represent a certain ideal. And that investment that we've made in this ideal, that should offset any deficiencies that we have. That should be a kapara, and it should be an education, and it should be an uplifting to counter any negative impacts that have taken place in this area. So we find this idea, whether it's about this parsha, or whether it's about parsha's tetzaveh, or whether it's about anywhere else, the point seems to be that the Big Day Kahuna are a positive kapara, a positive way of trying to atone for certain averos. And to that extent, like we've also emphasized, so nowadays we don't have the Big Day Kahuna, but we have Talmud Torah. So the Talmud Torah should also serve as that kind of a kapara, that especially if the purpose of the Big Day Kahuna is to serve symbolically, so the more we talk about the symbolism and the more we focus and concentrate on these issues, so hopefully it'll have somewhat of an effect that it'll accomplish something comparable. Okay, so then the next pasuk tells us that everyone was gathered together. V'eis kol ha'ida hakel el pesach ohel moed. Everyone's brought to the front of the Ohel Moed, the door of the Ohel Moed, which doesn't seem mathematically like that works. Right? That seems like that's going to be a little bit too crowded. So says Rashi, Ze'echad min ha'mekomos shehechazik mu'at es ha'meruba. So this is one of the places where miraculously a small space is able to hold a huge amount of people. And other Rishonim, others understood it differently. The Ibn Ezra writes that this doesn't refer to everybody, that this refers to the Eida, refers to the Einei HaEida, to the heads of the Shvatim. While Rashi's position here is what the Medrash says. Rashi is quoting the Torah's Kohanim, that this is essentially a miraculous event. So the Torah Tamima comments that the Torah's Kohanim is saying what it says in order to emphasize that it was a miracle. Basically, the Ibn Ezra seems to be bothered by the mathematics. How could it be that everyone's going to fit over there? So to that, that's what the Medrash seems to be addressing, that clearly mathematically it doesn't work out, physically it doesn't work out, but this was miraculous. Everybody was able to squeeze in. It's a question, what's the point of the miracle? We don't have miracles down. So what's the point of such a miracle? The Oznayim LaTorah comments about this, the Lutzke Rav. And the Oznayim LaTorah, so he has a couple of different suggestions, really maybe three suggestions, as to what was the purpose of the miracle. One is that the whole idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming to live in the Mishkan is itself an idea that's very hard to swallow. The notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Molei Kol Aretz Kvodo, that he's going to squeeze himself, so to speak, as the Kabbalistic term goes, at Tzimtzum. He's going to contract himself to live within such a space. So that's very hard for people to relate to and people to imagine. How exactly do you understand that idea? So perhaps the purpose of this nace is to give a little bit of a visual representation, even though it's still different. We're talking about people who are always going to be different than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bodiless form. But the idea of having all these people contract into this small space is perhaps a step towards helping the Jews be able to appreciate what it would mean for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come and focus his presence within the Mishkan. Alternatively, he also suggests that it's perhaps to symbolize the Achdus. The whole point of the Beis HaMikdash is to, in the Mishkan, is to bring everyone together, is to serve as one central location. And therefore, if that's the idea at this time when we are inaugurating the agents of the Mishkan, so we also want to bring everyone together in perhaps an unusual way, in a way that's not even physically possible, but in a way that will illustrate that that's the function of Mishkan. Maral comments in his Chidushim to Gittin that the whole idea that we have the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, because of a lack of Achdus among the Jewish people, is essentially Mida Keneged Mida, that that's the whole function of the Mishkan, is to bring us together, even not just us, but really the whole world. Ki Beisi Beis Tefila Yikare L'chal Ha'amim. So it's meant to be a central unifying location. And if that's not how we treat it, if that's not how we're ready to act, so then we don't fit into the Beis HaMikdash. So too, at this time of the Mishkan, perhaps the notion is that we should make a statement that this is about bringing us all together, and we force ourselves into this small space. And as some have commented also, maybe that's the idea that, okay, the physical proximity will hopefully engender a emotional proximity, which is interesting because sometimes you find it's the opposite, that people, in order to get along better, they need more space, and that they don't necessarily become greater friends because they're forced together in a small space. And you also find it works the other way. The Gemara says that when we get home, people get along well, then they don't need a lot of space. They can be together in a small space. But when people are fighting with each other, so then the whole world's not big enough to hold them. They don't want to be anywhere near each other. So maybe there's some kind of a synergistic relationship that goes both ways, that the better along you're, the more you're getting along well, then the more you're able to function together in a small space. And maybe the more you can function in a small space, the more you'll be able to get along, perhaps. But in any event, that's what he suggests, that this is the imagery that will squeeze everyone miraculously into a very small space in order to show the achdus the Mishkan is supposed to convey. He also suggests that maybe the functional reason, why is there a need to bring everyone here? So if the idea is that we're inaugurating the Kohanim here, so the Kohanim have a mission. You know, there is a name, a last name, which some Kohanim have, Kajdin. And so Kajdin is Rashi Tevos. The reason it's a name of Kahuna is because it's a Rashi Tevos for one of two things, two opposite positions the Gemara has. They both have the same Rashi Tevos of Kajdin. The Gemara says, how do we view the Kohanim? Do we say, Hani Kohane Shluchei Drachmana Ninhu, that Kohanim are the emissaries of God to the Jewish people? Or do we say, Hane Kohane Shluchei Didon Ninhu, that Kohanim are emissaries of us to God? So either way, it's Rashi Tevos Kajdin. Kohane Shluchei Drachmana Ninhu or Didon Ninhu, it comes out the same way. But if we assume the Kohanim are our shluchim, which halachically you have to explain, like the Dvar Avram comments, it doesn't mean shluchim in the halachic sense of shlucha shaladim kamoso, because that wouldn't work, because in order to be a halachic shliach, the person sending you has to be able to do it also. So what the Kohanim do on behalf of the Jewish people wouldn't work according to the laws of shlichus, because the Israelim can't do the things that they do. But in the more general sense, if the Kohanim are our emissaries, so if that's the idea, so then maybe we all have to be present, the whole Jewish people have to be present in order to confer that mission upon the Kohanim. So maybe that's the idea. But others, again, don't think that it really means that everyone was there. As we saw, the Ibn Ezra says that it was really just the heads of the community. And the Torah Tamima says, as much as he thinks that the whole point of the Medrash is that it was a miracle, but you can also understand where the Ibn Ezra is coming from, that if we're appointing Aaron as the Kohen Gadol, like the point we just said a minute ago, so maybe you don't necessarily need everybody, but you need at least the Sanhedrin, because you need, that's a part of how you inaugurate the Kohen Gadol. And the Yerushalmi suggests in Sanhedrin, the first parak, so again, a little segue towards next year, if you want to start with the Yerushalmi, that the heads of the Eda can also fill the role of the Sanhedrin. So they're all there in order to officially sanctify and to launch the Kohen Gadol. The Netziv has two suggestions along this point, where he suggests either that really it's everybody there, and the reason everybody's there, he says, is because maybe the Kohanim are like the Korban of the Jewish people. And we have an idea that when your korban is brought, so you should be present. You find that expression in the context of Bris Milah. It's a little bit spooky, but the idea that the father should be at least present when his son receives a Bris Milah, literature says that it's because It's like a korban. It's as if he's bringing a sacrifice here. And is it shayach for a person to bring a korban who eino omid al gavo? He's not going to be standing there while it happens. So too, as the kohanim are dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash, so they are like the korban of the whole Jewish people, says the Netziv, and therefore they should be standing there. Then he has a different suggestion, that maybe the idea is that Moshe wants to convey the importance of Torah Shebal Peh. That if you look, there are slight differences in terms of how this process is described and how it's described here. And therefore, that can only be a function of the Torah Shebal Peh, saying it should be done differently. So Moshe is basically displaying how the Torah Shebal Peh works. And if that's the case, so then you need the people to see that. And then he suggests it doesn't really mean all the people. The Eidar here refers to the Talmid Chachamim. So at least the people who are in a position to understand, the people who are in a position to chap, they should be there, and maybe that's what's going on. Okay, so to continue, the next pasuk then, talking about this gathering, so the pasuk says, Vayas Moshe kasher tziva Hashem oso, Vatikohel ha'ida el Pesach ohel moed. So what's this language of Vatikohel? It's a passive language, and they gathered. So it's an unusual formulation. So what exactly is going on here? Why do you find that passive language? So there is a short essay about this in the Mishkan Betzalel of Betzalel Rudinsky, where he compares this to a few things, but among them a Gemara in Maseches Brachos and the Avav Midbeis, where the Gemara says that a person who has Yiras Shamayim, so Dvarav Nishmayim. Person is a Yirei Shamayim, so his words are heard. So that's also a passive language. You would think that he speaks forcefully, he speaks effectively. What does it mean to say that his words are heard? Why do we refer to it passively? So there are those who suggest that the whole chap is that a person who is so representative of Yiras Shamayim, so that itself is his message. He doesn't even have to actually talk. He inspires people through his very being, and therefore the words that he would say, or the words that he represents, are heard, memela, are understood by the people around him, and he doesn't have to be so explicit. So to hear, Moshe's influence is such that the people gather together kind of on their own. So it's just interesting. Here's an unusual type of synergy here for us. So this Gemara about Kol Adam Sheish Bo Yirei Shemayim Dvarav Nishmayim, so that is at the centerpiece of an essay that Rav Nevensal Shlita has on this Aliyah. That Rav Nevensal has a whole essay quoting this pasuk for a different, quoting this mimer for a different reason. But on this Aliyah, Revi Yivtzav, so Rav Nevensal has a long essay where he talks about the whole idea of the kahuna here, and the notion that kahuna, as we know, is hereditary. Some things in Judaism are hereditary, some things aren't. So here we are clearly giving some acknowledgement to the value of a hereditary system, that here we have Aaron, the brother of Moshe, and his sons being appointed as the kahuna. So on the one hand, this is exactly what Korach's later on going to get upset about. And Korach's going to say, what's going on? It's just you and your family here. But on the other hand, so we see that clearly this is what they're told to do, and there must be something to it. But how could it be that even if they're qualified, that nobody else was equally qualified? What's pshat that here Yocheved and Amram, so their offspring, they're the ones who are crowned with all of this? So Rav Nevensal, coming from that question, has a whole essay about chinuch. Not just chinuch like we're talking about here of dedication, but chinuch in the education sense. And he talks about the fact that, talks at great length, about the fact that education is something that we often translate as something that you do to others, that you teach other people. You inspire and convey midos to other people. But really, chinuch equally is applicable to oneself. One could also take upon oneself as an educational process and see it as his mission to constantly grow and to develop. And that's equally, if not more so, a responsibility of chinuch. And it's more effective, too, because you're with yourself 24 hours a day, And you also know more about what needs to be fixed. Somebody who tries to impact on somebody else. So the limit, there's a limit to how much interaction they're going to have. And even the closest Talmidim are eventually going to move on. And even the closest Talmidim are only there for a certain amount of time a week. But if you take on yourself as a chinuch project, so you have a much greater chance of success. But most of us don't think that way. We only think of chinuch as something that goes outward, and we don't see ourselves as products that need to be continually worked on. So in the context of that essay, so he makes the point about ultimately, to whatever extent this chinuch is accomplished in the internal sense, so then that ends up getting passed on to the next generation. And that is a ki'ilu, it's a genetic trait, just like the eye color or the hair color. So too, that which is internalized to such a degree that it can be passed on, that's something that we find throughout our literature, and he brings various proofs and various drashos where he's building on this idea, but essentially saying that there is a tremendous value to that. Now, obviously, it's not the whole story, and I think that's also important that we learned the sugya of Hatzalah a few weeks ago, the Mishnah in Harius and the like. And so there, when the Mishnah talks about how we prioritize saving people, so on the one hand, it does put a importance on the Kohen Gadol, or Kohen, but then it says that Mamzer Talmud Chacham Kodem LeKohen Amaretz. So it seems like it's making the point that, yes, there is meaning to this hereditary chain, it is something that's significant, and at the same time, still, individual accomplishment can still overcome that. And that's a statement about what individual accomplishment can do, that it still has the greatest power to it. But at the same time, there's that setting the stage for how great Talmud Torah is, but there is a quality that is passed on, and therefore Aaron's accomplishments entitle him to be Kohen Gadol, and entitle him also to have the expectation that this is passed on through his family. Daniel?
Yeah, that's why Muhammad Elijah, wherever he went, he would always get the coin, because it was always like,
So, well, nowadays, we said we don't do that anymore because we're worried about Shalom. But strictly speaking, a Talmid Chacham could get the first Aliyah, but we're afraid of Shalom from two angles. We're afraid that it's a lot more subjective. It's easier to say who's a Kohen and who isn't, but you're going to get involved inside of who's a Talmid Chacham and who isn't. And also, if we let the Kohen be Mochel for the first Aliyah, we're worried also where that's going to go in terms of Shalom. So he's Mochel for this guy, he's not Mochel for that guy. So Halacha L'maaseh, nowadays we always give the Kohen the first. But as far as Hatzalah, so the Gemara says that it is possible to rise even above that. But at the same time, that's only a meaningful point after you first acknowledge that there is some value that this chain represents, and that's the idea that when something is so internalized, it actually is real and can be passed on to the next generation. So at the center of this whole discussion that he has is the same Maimar Chazal that Rav Dinsky quotes in this other context, the idea of Kol Adam Sheyesh Bo Yerushalayim Dvarav Nishmayim, that there is a passive impact that one has. It doesn't even go to what he actually says. What he says is a different madrega. But the way a person lives and the way a person represents certain values, that's much more effective as far as conveying the message than anything else. And that's the topic of an extensive essay that he had, really commenting on this aliyah. Okay, so also the pasuk says, El Pesach O Moed. So the Tosefta in the third parak of Megillah has a comment here, which it's hard to know how exactly it sees in the pasuk. The Torah Tamima tries to figure out exactly how you see this, but somehow the Tosefta understands that that shows you that they're all facing the Pesach, so that in Shul, the Chazan and the Tzibur should all face front, should all face the Aram. So the Torah Tamima says hard to see how that's conveyed here, because presumably if Moshe is talking to them, so he's facing away, and the rest of them are facing front. But in any event, this becomes certainly our practice nowadays, like the Tosefta says, that to believe that the Kohen is the Shliach, the Kohen, the Chazan, is the Shliach Tzibur. So that means that he's not the person who is talking to us, but he is the person who is leading the tefillah, so all of us are praying towards the Aron, or whatever direction, towards Yerushalayim, and the leader is just standing in front and doing that. These issues of facing sometimes make a big difference. You know, there was a whole discussion at the wedding who should, where should the chassan and kala face? Should they face the front? Should they face the rabbi? Well, let's say they're going to face the rabbi one way or another, but where is who's facing which way? So you have the audience, and the chassan kala, do they have their back to him? And the back, they have their back to the audience, and the rabbi is facing the audience? Or is it the other way around, that the rabbi has his back to the audience, and the chassan kala are facing the audience? So there are those rabbanim who suggest that it should be done, that the chassan kala should be facing the audience, and the rabbi is essentially part of the audience, standing in front. And that to do it the other way, that's the way they do it in the church, that the priest is in the front, facing the audience, and therefore it's chukas agayim to do it that way. So whether or not you have to go so far as to say it's chukas agayim, and I'm not necessarily recommending making a huge deal about this, but what's the lumdus? The idea is it's not just okay, you know, it could seem random who stands where, but it's more about what exactly is going on. That if you have an audience who comes to watch something, so they're watching the actors, they're watching the primary players. So who's the star of the show? You go to a wedding, so who's the star of the show? So is the rabbi the star of the show, or the chassan and kala the star of the show? So in the Christian wedding, in the church wedding, so the priest is the star of the show, because he is the one who is marrying them. So we understand, we all come to watch what he does. So we're all sitting around watching the priest marry the two of them. But in a Jewish wedding, one of our topics for this year, so really the rabbi isn't officiating in that sense. That it's really the chassan is marrying the kala, and she is accepting. And the rabbi is there in a supervisory role. That really the role of the Masadik Kedushin in a Jewish wedding is he's not there to actually make something kosher or not. He's there to make sure that everything is happening in Kedas Moshe Yisrael. So therefore, it makes more sense, based on the lumdus, that the audience is there to watch what the chassan and kala are doing, and the rabbi is also watching just like that, but he has a front row seat because he's got to watch it more carefully, so he's up there in front, but he's also facing the front like the rest of them. So it's just in terms of these halachas of who faces which direction, so too our attitude in shul is that the chazan is there in order to represent us, be one of the mispalim, but we're not praying to him, so therefore it makes sense that just like the rest of the tzibur, he should be facing front. Okay, so the next pasuk hey, says Vayomer Moshe al Hayda Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Hashem LaAsos. So this is the matter. So what exactly is that idea of Zeh Hadavar? So Rashi comments over here that I'm just doing what God told me to do. I'm not doing this for my own covet. I'm doing this because God said this is how it should happen. And the Netziv has a comment here, consistent with what he said before, that it's because there were differences in how it was originally portrayed, so therefore he wanted the Jews to understand that he's doing it the way God told him to do it. The same point he made before about Torah Shabbat Pat, that you should understand that this is how it's done. But the Gemara in the Seches Yuma, and the Ches Amid Beis, the Gemara says that Zeh HaDavar, that's to show that the dibor is ma'akev, that part of this process he actually has to, so to speak, read the parsha, he has to say it out loud. And that's, we alluded to this when we talked about Parshas Parah and Parshas Zachar, that in general, so there is no obligation of Kriyas HaTorah, Min HaTorah, but there are a handful of times when the Torah obligates us to read something. So maybe Parshas Zachar and Parshas Parah in terms of laning in the Tzibor. But even without that, so there are other times, like in the parsha of Chalitza and Mikra Bikurim, there are other times when the Torah tells us to read a section from the Torah. So apparently that's true here as well also, and that's Ma'akev, that you have to read this part for the Chinuch HaKohanim. And the Sefer Chavetzel Sasharon, which you won't get a chance to really discuss it, but if you look, the Chavetzel Sasharon is the contemporary Sefer on Chumash, a lot of very beautiful lumdish things. So he has about 40 pages on this aliyah, going through every prat of what was exactly going on in all of the lumdis. So if you're looking for some more marmakomos on that, feel free to see the Chavetzel Sasharon and Parshas Tzav. But there he suggests that this idea of reciting the parsha, it's different than what you have, let's say, by Chalitza. By Chalitza, so there's a mitzvah of Chalitza, and there's also an obligation that you should read the parsha of the Chalitza. But here, he suggests that the recitation of the parasha, that is a part of this process of inaugurating the Kohanim, and that's a necessary component of what was going on. And he says, therefore, also, that's why we're now worried, for example, about the idea of Dvarim Shebichsav, Yatayr Shayla Amram Alpeh, that normally things that are part of the written Torah should be read from the text. So he quotes the Tshuvas Chikrei Lev, who says that's a requirement in Talmud Torah. But this is not here for the purposes of Talmud Torah, this is a part of the process, and therefore that recitation takes on a different status. Okay. So just to go a little bit further here, so then the pasuk says, "Vayakrev Moshe as Aaron v'as banav v'yirchatz osam b'mayim v'yitain olav as hakutones v'yachgor oso ba'avneit v'yalbeish oso as sami'il v'yitain olav as ha'ifod v'yachgor oso v'cheshev ha'ifod v'yepo lo bo." So here he basically puts on the big day kahuna for him. So some of them apparently a little bit more actively than others. So cause for the ephod, it says, Vayitain alavas ephod. He just put it upon him. So what exactly is that language there to convey? So the Netziv says that it's there to show that nesina, that just putting something on somebody, is the same as wearing it. And we find that in Hilchas Shatnez also, that ta'allah, just putting something on top of you, is also considered to be wearing it for the purposes of Shatnez. But it also sounds like from this pasuk that there is a very specific ordering to how the clothes go on. So that ordering, it sounds like that's not necessarily about the Big Day Kahuna in general, but that's a part of this ritual, this idea of the chinuch of the Kohen, that had to be done this way. This was the public dressing of the Kohen in this order. That's how the Brisker Rav notes the pasuk sounds like. But the Rambam understood it differently. The Rambam understood it that this was always the case. Ladoros, this is how the Kohen had to get dressed, following this specific order, which is surprising because from the context here, one would have thought that it's specifically as a function of this Chagas Micha, so to speak. So that's also a topic that the Chavetz Chaim has a long essay about. You could take a look and see what he has to say about that as well. This next pasuk, just so you want to know a milestone, so pasuk Ches, V'yasam alav v'sachoshin v'yitein v'sachoshin v'sa'urim v'sa'atumim. So he should put the choshen on. So this pasuk between Zion and Ches, this is where the Torah comes to the halfway point. So if you were wondering in terms of psukim, when you hit the halfway point, so we just hit it, and Rav Schwab has a little comment here, if you want to take a look, it's a little bit of a cute idea, that he says that here, since we just talked about the belt, so the belt is about, we find it halacha, the whole idea of a gartel, that the belt is about the division between the Gashmias and the Ruchnias, so too, this point of division, that's where the Torah, you see the Hashgacha, and how the Torah comes out, the point of division is talking about the belt that's there to divide between the upper and lower realms. And then he notes also, you can say similar ideas, you can take a look, in the place where the Torah is the middle point in terms of letters, and the middle point in terms of words, he has a similar mahalchim, how the content there is also about middle and about division, and that's all a part of the Hashgacha of how the Torah is written. So I'll just mention one more idea here before maybe saying a few words about the Shabbos HaGadol. So the Pasuk, to move on to Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph, so the Torah talks about the Vayikach Moshe as Hashem and HaMishcha, Vayimshach as HaMishcha and V'yeskal Asher Bo, Vayikadesh Osam. So Moshe takes the Hashem and HaMishcha, and he anoints the Mishkan itself and everything that's in it. And then the next pasuk says, "Vayaz mimenu al hamizbeach sheva pa'amim, vayimshaches hamizbeach v'yas kol kelav v'yas hakiyor v'yas kano la'kadsham." And he anoints essentially everything, all the mizbeach, the utensils, the kiyor, all of it, that all gets the Shemen HaMishcha treatment. So once again, Rav Nevensal has another essay about this, where he has also a very long essay about the importance of preparation and how we don't have anything holy without first having preparation for it. And the idea of the Shemen HaMishcha, which is here sanctifying the Kelim too, everything that's a part of this process gets special attention. So that, he says, is to highlight this importance of preparation. And he notes that etymologically, as far as the word is concerned, that HaMishcha, what does Mishcha mean? So it means two things. And if he was writing it in English, then maybe he would have said that it means anointing and appointing. That, that is there to convey that sach, that something is being anointed with oil. But the language also conveys that something is being promoted, is being elevated to a higher status, and that that's really the role of this anointing oil in order to designate things for higher roles. And even at the earlier stages, that's the point, that everything needs preparation in order for it to be effective. And it goes on that hachana is from the language of kan, of container, that you only have the ability to hold on to something because it has been prepared first. And then he goes on to say kavana is also from the language of hachana. We talked about this week a little bit about having kavana for the mitzvahs, when that's required and how it's required. So his essential point is that nothing really takes off, nothing is really effective without this preparation, and that's why we'll start next week in the Sfiras HaOmer, as we count towards the giving of the Torah, that we can't just all of a sudden show up by Matan Torah, we need a stage of preparation, and that that's a part of the imagery that we have with the Shem and HaMishcha in order to show us just how crucial preparation is at every stage of life. So as we discussed a little bit on Sunday, that the preparation for Pesach, mentioned the Mahalach there about how the preparation for Pesach is part of Pesach itself, that is embedded in the Chag. So we've been now ready for a few weeks in the time of Shlosh Shem Yom, so now we're getting to the finish line with 1 week left. It's more than it usually is, in that Shabbos HaGadol, sometimes Shabbos HaGadol is right before Pesach, but here we have a whole week, but it gives us a week HaGadol. It gives us it's a very long gap between Shabbos HaGadol and Pesach, but it helps us to highlight this last week of preparation. So maybe we'll just discuss for a minute or two the idea of Shabbos HaGadol, the notion of this Shabbos being designated with a special status, what exactly the idea of Gadol means. So there are a lot of different theories. Rabbi Chalap Shlita, in his many, many decades in the rabbinate, I don't know how long he kept this up for, maybe he still does this, but he told me once a few years ago, he was already been a rabbi for many, many decades, that every single year he would give a different reason why Shabbos HaGadol is called Shabbos HaGadol, and he never repeated himself. He always had different reasons. So what does that mean? It means they're all true. So we don't know exactly what it is. Some suggest it's a reference to Haggadah, that it shouldn't be Haggadol, it's really Haggadah, that this is the Shabbos that we start preparing by reading the Haggadah, and many have that practice to do that. Also a expression of the importance of preparation, that we don't expect that we're going to be able to have the effect of the Haggadah by just walking into it without any forethought, so we want to take some time beforehand to read the Haggadah. It's hard to find the time to do that. That's a part of the problem. There's so many beautiful Haggadahs out there, and it's hard to stay on top of them all, especially because essentially we have really one day to read them, because it's so hard to find time. So it's usually one of the consolation prize for living in Chutz La'aretz is you have a second Seder. So before the first Seder, it's hard to find time to read anything. But before the second Seder, then hopefully you have a little bit of time. So this is perhaps a consolation prize that we're here in Chutz La'aretz. We have to have a Yantiv Sheni, but Yantiv Sheni means that we can prepare for the Seder. And reading the Haggadah in advance is definitely an element of that. So the idea of Shabbos HaGadol is for that. It's one possibility. But others suggest that it does mean Gadol, and the question is, what is Gadol meant to suggest? So when they changed the clocks, they made the day longer, but days shorter, depends on how you start counting. There are those who suggest that it's called Haggadol because it feels long, because the rabbi gives a long drasha, which makes the day feel long, so maybe it's called Gadol for that reason. Others thought that it was reflective of a nes that was Gadol. What was the nes? The nes, not Yetzias Mitzrayim itself, that's what Pesach is for, but events leading up to Yetzias Mitzrayim, some suggest, based on a medrash and based on the way the Torah has it, that this has to do with either the medrash discusses that there was a war with the firstborns of Mitzrayim. They took on their own people because they found out what was going to happen, and they waged a war against many of the Mitzrayim, and they had their own impact, and therefore that's something that we commemorate. The Torah talks about the fact that the Jews were preparing the lambs for slaughter, for the Korban Pesach, And they were able to do that without the Mitzrim slaughtering them, which is impressive because the Mitzrim venerated lambs as gods. And the idea that the Jews would be able to get away with preparing them for Shechita to be given to the real God, and that they could survive doing that, that's a nace. That's not something that you could expect to actually get away with. So that itself is impressive. And that's also reflective of the idea that we have that the Rambam has in Mor Nevuchim, that the notion of Karbanos in general, this was a part of the whole Machlokas, very relevant to understanding Sefer Vayikra, but the role of Karbanos in Hashkafa, and the question whether Karbanos has inherent value to it, or is it there for a different reason, is it there for a historical reason? So one of the suggestions that the Rambam has is that the purpose of the Karbanos is because the other nations of the world were venerating and idolizing these animals. So we're showing that we don't think these animals are gods. These animals are given as sacrifices to the real God. So here that's happening at the beginning of the Jewish nation. And the fact that they were able to survive that, so maybe that's the reason that it's considered to be a Shabbos HaGadol. The Pri Chadosh writes that it's because of the mitzvah of setting aside the lamb for the korban, and therefore that's godless, so to speak. That's like a bar mitzvah. That's like the Jews, now they have their chiyuv mitzvah, so the Jews as a nation, it's kilu, they're a 13-year-old boy, they become a gadol, so therefore we refer to the Shabbos as gadol for that reason. The Chassam Sofer has a different understanding that since the Jews now are going back to God, they're essentially doing tshuva from their idolatrous experience in Mitzrayim, so therefore God is called the Gadol, and to go back to the Gadol, that's what this Shabbos represents. We'll just mention one more idea, but it's irrelevant to what we said before. So the Abudraham writes that here in the Haftorah, that very often you have a special Shabbos that has a name to it, so the name is usually from the Haftorah. So we find Shabbos Chazon, Shabbos Nachamu, Shabbos Shuva. So those words are all based on the Haftorah. Even like you have a Haftorah like Shabbos Shuva, so it sounds like it's called Shabbos Teshuva, so you think that, okay, it's named after Yom Kippur. But it's Shabbos Shuva because that's the first word of the first significant word of the Haftorah. So all these words come from the Haftorah. So too, Hagadol, maybe that comes from the Haftorah, from the book of Malachi that we read as the Haftorah for Shabbos Hagadol, where the Pasuk says, the song, very well known Pasuk, Hine Anochi Sholeach Lachem Eselya Navi Lifnei Bo Yom Hashem Hagadol Vehanorah, that we're looking towards this great day. That's we're all one step in the process of redemption here. So that's identified by this Haftorah, and the Haftorah is looking towards this great moment, Hagadol. So perhaps we'll just end on a note that pasuk goes on to say that how exactly people are brought to this moment, the famous line from the next pasuk, v'heishiv levavos al banim, v'lev badim al avosam. So parents have an impact on their children, and children have an impact on their parents, which essentially is to make Rav Nevensal's point that the idea of chinuch is not simply that you instruct people what to do, but because of the life that you lead and because of the values that you embody, so that has an impact on the people around you, and therefore it goes in both directions. Children are going to be impressed by their parents. Parents will be impressed by their children. People will live noble existences that will cause the people around them to be inspired and be motivated to take on that kind of existence as well. And that will bring Eliyahu, that will bring the day, the Yom HaGadol V'Hanorah. So as we think about the themes of this Aliyah, and the messages that this whole process of kahuna is meant to evoke as far as the lives that we try to create, so it should be a bracha that's also what Pesach will accomplish. And the Pesach is a time when the levavos abanim, levanim al avosim, when the banim and the avosim and the grandparents and the grandchildren and the cousins all get together and have the ability to impact each other. So it's a time of achdus like we saw in the parsha, and it's a time for conveying these messages, and it's a time for passing on the influence that comes not only through the direct instruction, but through the modeling and through the internalization of the values that have been transmitted from one generation to the next. And that's the theme of Pesach, that's the theme of the Haftorah, and perhaps that's the theme of this fourth Aliyah of Tzav as well. And through focusing on all of those messages, we should be matzliach to bring the full realization of all of these ideals. Okay, I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll dive in for first. Asher,